And first, a quick word from our podcast sponsor.
FactSet delivers superior data, analytics, and flexible technology to help more than 170,000 users see and seize opportunities sooner. For over 40 years, we have given investment professionals the edge to outperform with informed insights, workflow solutions across the portfolio lifecycle, and industry-leading support from dedicated specialists. Through market changes and technological progress, we're proud to have been recognized with multiple awards for our analytical and data-driven solutions, while staying connected to our clients and each other. Learn more at www.factset.com.
Hello, this is a new episode of CFA Institute Sustainability Story. I'm Andres Vinelli. And today we are joined by Marcos Buscaglia, who's an economist, author, and expert on emerging markets, economics, and finance. He formerly headed Bank of America Merrill Lynch Latin American Division and served as chief economist for Citibank Latin America. Marcos is the author of Beyond ESG Portfolio, How Wall Street Can Help Democracies Survive, a new book that explores the role of capital markets in funding autocrats around the world. Hello, Marcos. Thank you for being here.
Hello, Andres. Thank you very much for hosting me, and I'm very enthusiastic about the conversation.
You read a Pathbait book on the effects of capital markets on funding democracies and funding autocratic regimes. So why do you think, Marcos, that investors should care about democracy when they want a decent risk-adjusted return?
Okay, yeah, that's a very good question. I mean, well, you know, they should care because there is a democratic decline in the world. I mean, since the year 2006, particularly in emerging market countries, we have seen a big democratic decline. I mean, there is unanimity among, you know, democracy watchers such as Freedom House, Economist Intelligence Unit, that democracy has been suffering and has been basically abandoned in some countries such as Russia and Turkey, you know, in the last couple of decades. So they should care, you know. And on top of that, you know, what we learn about Russia is that what happens in a country when it has a democratic backslide, it doesn't get restricted to that country, but sometimes it has, you know, repercussions in other countries, including possibly in the country that you're living in. You know, for instance, what happened in, you know, with global markets, food prices after Russia's invasion, you know, to Ukraine and energy prices. You know, second example is what we're witnessing now with Venezuelans, you know, trying to get to the U.S., you know, through the border. You know, so Venezuela is the biggest humanitarian crisis in a country that has not been struck by a war or a civil war. And so Venezuela has had a democratic decline. You say, why would I care? Well, you know, it has a repercussion in the U.S. So that's the first thing. I mean, there is a democratic decline. And the way I think is, well, so the first thing that you should care is about to do good. In the same way that markets are now, you know, correcting and implementing, you know, ESG strategies and investing in green bonds. I mean, because basically that is a response to the investors' concerns about the climate and other, you know, issues like, you know, gender equality or the protection of minorities, et cetera, et cetera. Well, you know, we should care about democracy for the reason that I say, you know, there is a democratic decline, and that democratic decline oftentimes has implications even for investors in the Western democracy. Second, there's a second reason, although, you know, to be perfectly clear, the research is not conclusive on this, but I think that in the long run, you know, you should also do better investing in democracies, right? Why is that? Again, the academic research is not conclusive on this, you know, but my idea is, well, you know, democracies tend to grow faster. There is more consensus on this, you know. So if democracies grow faster than non-democracies, well, companies that are headquartered in democratic countries should also do better than companies than in non-democratic, you know, countries. But again, I say this with some trepidation in the sense that there's no conclusive research, as you probably know, on this.
Super interesting. And when did you first notice this? And how made you put the spotlight into this phenomenon? Was it the invasion of the Ukraine by Russia, or was it before then?
No, it was before. You know, as an economist covering Latin America, I discovered after many, many years that knowing about the shape of institutions in countries is very important for what you do. You know, so institutions are very important. I mean, it's not that just that you have to make, you know, GDP, inflation, et cetera, focus in a vacuum, but basically politics is very important and institutions are very important. That was the first step in my career. And then, you know, there was one day in which I had this idea, this eureka moment, so to speak, that I was visiting a client in New York. And when Cristina Kirchner was about to become president again in Argentina, that's my home country. And basically for the third time, I mean, now as vice president, but in a ticket that she had chosen, so everyone knew that she was going to call the shots there. I'm talking about late 2019.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to see this client, and the client said, well, you know, if the new government, you know, basically implements sensible policies, we, you know, markets are going to, you know, be willing to finance Argentina. And I came out saying, you know, this is not right. This is a very nice, smart, and, you know, democracy-loving client. But, you know, basically, I suspected that Cristina Kirchner would try to undermine democracy in Argentina, basically at least by overriding, you know, judicial independence to get a, you know, free from jail card. So I said, this is not right. And so after that meeting, you know, I started penciling a small piece that I published in the Financial Times blog Beyond BRICS in early 2020, and I got a lot of attention. I said, you know, well, you know, I'm hearing of something that is a lot, it's bigger than I thought it was. I got, you know, a lot of attention from human rights activists and journalists around the world and investors, you know, so that they say, oh, you know, what you're saying is right. So that's why when I decided to write the book. And of course, you know, what happened in Russia, you know, reinforced, you know, my views.
Interesting. So do you think that this is something that happens, say, in the case of Venezuela, Argentina, and then you mentioned Russia? Is it a series of anecdotes, or do you think that there's something structural going on that basically it's hard to stop, or we need to pull the magnifying glass and say, well, how can we change the structural events here?
Very good question. I think it's structural, right? And most importantly, it's not only structural, but it's mostly people end up investing in autocracies unwittingly. You know, I dare you, Andres, to when we finish this podcast, to go and check your, you know, 401k, Roth IRA, and I'm pretty sure that you will be in your portfolio financing autocracies. And why is that? Because either investors directly through ETFs, right? Or indirectly when, you know, our pension funds or, you know, that, you know, the pension funds, you know, send the money to investment specialists, you know, professional investment managers that specialize in emerging markets, you know, through mutual funds. All these, both ETFs and mutual funds, most of them are passive investments in the sense that they track indices, right? So you buy an ETF and say, well, I want, let's say, and this, we're discussing, oh, I want to diversify and invest in emerging markets. So you would go and check for ETF that track emerging market stocks or emerging market bonds. Well, these indices include autocracies. Let's say the JP Morgan, the Morgan Stanley MSCI stock index that, you know, is the most widely tracked, you know, basically, for instance, 30% of it is China, you know? So you're investing 30% of your money in Chinese companies, which many people argue for practical purposes, you know, are, you know, like quasi-sovereigns. I mean, they should, you know, they have seized the Chinese Communist Party cells inside. They should, you know, they're not real private companies, right? And then the most, you know, follow track is a government bond index, the JP Morgan MB Diversified Index also has, out of 76 countries, 35 are, you know, what I call non-democratic in my book. I can elaborate on why. And 16 are what I call highly autocratic. So, you know, sometimes you see, when we saw what happened, for instance, in Venezuela, you know, that you saw, I saw this in real time, you saw democracy sleeping, and you saw at the same time investors putting, you know, money in Venezuela, you know, well, Venezuela represented, you know, not a huge percentage of the MB, but given that the bonds, the bond yields were so high, you know, you as an institutional investor, you couldn't avoid being invested in Venezuela, because if you did, you know, when Venezuela bonds were performing, you would miss, you know, the index, and, you know, by a big, you know, percentage. And then the pension funds, you know, that were putting money on your on investing in your company would say, oh, you're not a good manager.
That's very, very interesting, right? Because it's not only the mechanical passive investment that forces you to put money there, but it's also the folks who are trying to be active in their investments. In practice, they have to notice the benchmark index, right? And that benchmark index basically nudges big time towards decisions that you might not make, such as investing in autocracy. So this index hugging behavior, very important in this area, right? So what can an investor do to get out of this unwitting trap there?
Yeah. So in the equity world, there are a few ETFs that are starting to include, you know, democracy considerations. One is an emerging markets index, and one is a ex-US equity index, the benchmark, you know, where that they compare to. The fixed income world, I have not seen any yet. Institutional investors have some alternatives in the equity and the bond market to invest. But to be honest, you know, there are very, you know, little alternatives now. The way I see my work here is I see my work as an activist in the same way that, you know, that environmentalists were 20 years from now, 30 years now from now. I mean, 20 years from now, Andres, you know, we seldom talk about ESG. You know, most of the money did not follow any ESG standard. And it was the activism, you know, of investors that forced the market, you know, I'm talking about institutional investors and other market players, to add ESG mandates, considerations to investment decisions. So I see where we are just starting. But you cannot address a problem that is not seen as a problem. And I think that my job is to, with the book, is to convey, you know, that this is a problem because there is a democratic decline and markets have been involved with this democratic decline. Let me tell you the story that I like the most about this. Very, very nice story. Last year, Turkey had elections, presidential elections. All the polls were pointing to Erdogan losing power. And basically, he was spending like crazy. The government was spending like crazy to allow him to win re-election. Well, 41 days before the election, Turkey, the Turkish government, issued the first ever green bond of the country. $2.5 billion.
What a coincidence, I might say. Yeah.
What a coincidence. And markets cheer that because, you know, of course, we all love, you know, green bonds. But money is fungible, you know. And so basically, even if that money was allocated to green investments, it is freeing space in the budget to spend in other items like winning a re-election. And Erdogan won the re-election. This is a statistic from a couple of years ago, but out of 35 countries, I'm talking about the governments now, issuing GSS bonds, 11 were autocratic countries in a way that I defined in the book, and 4 were highly autocratic. So there is greenwashing there. And so the point is, I think this is a problem, that if we had these considerations in mind, the market would have not bought that bond 41 days before the election.
Fascinating. We just don't have the habit of checking for this. It's very interesting because the folks that the retail investors, basically the surveys say that they want to understand what companies they are helping with their money, right? And they want to know what they own. And many people have specific goals or things that they want from their money and they don't want from them. For instance, there's in the US, a lot of surveys show that people are interested in helping out create good jobs, jobs that are not of low quality, but jobs that provide a livelihood and provide a career. most people would say that they favor democracy, and they all have a we all have an intuitive sense that democracy is sleeping around the world. What is it that we have to look to then? You know, if you would say, well, gee, how do I know if this jurisdiction is of high institutional quality or low democratic quality? Where do you go for that, Marcos?
Okay, yeah, good that you asked, because I forgot to tell you before, there is an initiative that I like about that. It's called defunddictators.org. It's a site basically created by the Human Rights Foundation. The chairman of the Human Rights Foundation is Garry Kasparov, the former chess master and a political activist, Russian political activist. And so you can go into that site and enter the name of any ETF that is an emerging markets equity ETF and check when it is investing. So you can check that, okay? So that's one alternative. Of course, for bigger investor, I mean, if the people watching this are institutional investor or pension fund managers, you can go to the institutional investor that you're putting the money under management and say, well, you know, you have this mandate. We want to expand into emerging markets, but we want to avoid countries X, Y, etc. And let me add something that is very important, because I get this question very, very often. That is, how do you measure, you know, democracy? And it's a contentious issue. I mean, they're not perfect measures, but there are good news on this. And that is, we check, and the correlation between the main democracy watchers indices like Freedom House, Economist Intelligence Unit, and VDEM. VDEM stands for Varieties of Democracy. These are the main three that I use in the book. The correlation is very high. It's close to 90% among them. So they use different methodologies, you know, the different inputs, but they are tapping into the same reality. And that's very encouraging. I mean, in the sense that, you know, you see their indices, when you see democratic decline in a country, like, I don't know, what happened in Venezuela early this century, you know, they you know, yes, sometimes one goes up before the other. This the same that happens with credit rating agencies. Their correlation is also very, very high. Yeah, sometimes, you know, one puts a country, you know, one notch above, below the other one, you know, ahead of time. But at the end of the day, they're tapping into the same reality. Well, the same happens with democracy indices. So, of course, you know, it's not easy, the measurement of democracy, because democracies do not die the old ways. You know, typically they do not die through coup d'etats. You know, they die through tinkering with the judicial independence, with the electoral process, with the freedom of press, and they're little by little, you know. And so it's not a binary, variable like it used to be some decades ago, where you had either democracy or you had, you know, a military guy in command. Well, but still, you know, we can do that. So you, if you're an institutional investor, you can go to your fund manager and say, well, you know, I want to avoid investment in a country's X, Y, Z.
Super interesting, because usually on these matters of politics, there are three ways that one can act. We can vote with our feet, right, and leave a place that is becoming less democratic or totally authoritarian. You can vote with your wallet, you know, by which is what we are talking about, you know. And now what I hear from you, Marcos, is we have no excuse. If this indices, be it the Transparency International, was it, or the, you know, or the other, they are highly correlated, so they're good enough. All of them are good enough for this. So you can vote for your wallet. I'm going to ask you perhaps the last question about the third way to vote, which is to use your proxy vote. You know, people can perhaps have solicit companies to do X, Y, and Z, for instance, not to invest in regimes that are not appropriate to democracy and all that. What's going on that front? Has there been any, because sustainable investing and ESG has had a lot of developments in that area where people put up propositions and they vote. Has this even happened in this area?
Not in a institutionalized way, in the sense that when you look at ESG corrected indices, let me tell you, ESG scores in general, and for the same reason ESG corrected indices, they do not take into account democracy. Let me tell you another very nice story. You know, by the time Russia invaded Ukraine, the ESG corrected version of the JP Morgan NB index, that is the most tracked index in the emerging market sovereign bonds, dollar bonds, the ESG corrected one, in that one, Russia had a bigger share than in the non-ESG corrected.
No.
It was a small difference.
No. How can that be?
I don't know exactly because I didn't have the whole index. I just read in an article. But I guess it's because some other countries were excluded from the ESG corrected one because they were, I don't know, bigger polluters. I don't know exactly.
Okay, so they're so uglier than the last, yeah.
No, that tells you that ESG scores are not correcting for democracy. But I say in an institutionalized way, because then when you talk to people in the market, there are many investors that do that in a tailored way. So I have some, you know, friends who manage, you know, hedge funds or investment companies say, oh, no, this big pension fund came to me and say, well, I want an emerging market, you know, strategy, but excluding countries. You know, there are some people is doing that already, but in a very ad hoc manner, not I have not seen that in an institutionalized way. The ones I think that are more advanced in this are, you know, Northern European pension funds. These guys have been more active in excluding non-democratic countries from their portfolios. So, but again, in an institutionalized way, I have not seen that. And that's because as far as we check, you know, for the book, you know, my research team and myself, we went into books and articles and, you know, in most of them, we didn't even find, you know, when you go to the index on the back of the book, the word democracy was not there. So basically, I would not be fair if I said that nothing is being done, because I hear from a lot of people in the industry that in an ad hoc manner, this is implemented in different ways.
Interesting. I mean, it seems to me like this is one of those situations that we could all be collectively blind to something, but once you see it, you cannot unsee it, right? And once you know
that... I will use that.
Okay, you can have it.
You cannot unsee it yet. I like it.
You cannot unsee it. And it's great for several reasons to focus on democracy, especially as we see how real consequences of excessive discretion by autocrats could lead to poor outcomes. And also, they erode the business environment, right, that folks really need in order to develop their activities. So even though it's not very clear because it's hard to measure whether these two things are linked in this economic fashion through returns, we do know that, well, you just cannot rely all your investors on the whim of one data that might wake up and say, well, that he or she might not need you.
We're having so many examples, you know, recently of the downside risk of that. You know, look what happened with Russia. Look what is happening with China, you know. So basically, we have seen a lot of downside risk from investing in autocracies. So again, I don't want to overemphasize that point because, to be honest, you know, the research is not there, but intuitively, And with the many examples that we're seeing, you know, it makes sense to me that it's not only that you're going to do good, but you're probably going to do better, you know?
Well, Marcos Buscaglia, author of the new book, Beyond the ESG Portfolio, How Wall Street Can Help Democracies Survive. This is a big challenge for the field of sustainability investment. Now we have seen this picture, Marcos, and we cannot unsee it, but what we can do is check out your book. But thank you so much for sharing your perspective, Marcos.
Thank you, Andres. Very nice talking to you.
Thank you. Until the next episode.